and to coach life.
Welcome to Coach Life, where we talk to coaches from all sporting backgrounds. We discuss their coaching qualifications, their beliefs, their experiences, their players, the environment they set, and just their coaching life in general.
Rob, thanks for joining me. Could you give anybody that doesn't know you a little bit of background about you, your coaching or qualifications, that sort of thing?
Yeah, no problem. So, yeah, my name is Rob Porter. I'm a UEFA B licence and FA Youth Award coach. I've also done the level one goalkeeping. I've got a foot in sort of a pretty much every single camp, to be honest with you, in terms of my coaching. I coach my son's grassroots team. It's my youngest son. I coached his older brother's team for sort of 5 or 6 years until they stopped playing. I do a bit of development centre coaching with Oxford United and community coaching, both boys and girls. And I'm also under-12s coach with Oxford United RTC. So pretty busy boy.
Cool. Yeah. So how often a week are you coaching then?
Last season, it was about 7 or 8 sessions a week and then a match day as well. So it was pretty full on, you know, cool. 4 nights a week.
Yeah. Blimey. That's a lot. So I usually try and go off what you said at the start. So just before we get into it, how are you different now to coaching your younger son to how you were with your older son?
A lot different, to be honest with you. When I first started, so we had a manager who was very, very old school, very shouty, very line drills. And there was another coach who just, he was doing his youth modules at the time, very laid back, very relaxed. So when I first started, I kind of saw both sides of both ends of the coaching spectrum. I sort of saw maybe the not so good and the good. But yeah, I think one of the main things, I think with the more years you do, is the confidence really grows, to be honest with you. And I remember the first few sessions I did, it was literally me pretty much hiding behind the whistle, you know, whistling things, and it obviously it wasn't great, but I don't think anybody when they start coaching is particularly good. But yeah, now just a lot more relaxed. I know myself as a coach. I know what I like, I know what I don't like, and to be honest with you, you know, I know how to, well, I don't want to brag, but I know how to put on an enjoyable session, hopefully.
yeah exactly. So it brings us on to the topic that we decided to talk about, basically, which was self-reflection as a coach. So to me, that already says that you are now different in a better, in a good way from when you started to now.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So tell me what your sessions would look like. What would they mainly look like?
Was this now or then?
Now.
I think it depends with the age group, and also depends with the level I'm coaching as well. With my son's grassroots sessions, they're under 14s now, so it's a lot sort of game, realistic practices, phases of the play, small sided games. You know, so I would have said at least 50% of the sessions, if not more, are game related. If probably even 75% at sometimes. At maybe different aspects of the formation or working with units. And then going through to the RTC side of things, or I work in the foundation phase, where I think one of the main things for me is getting a good balance between repetition and realism. So if, for example, we're working on 1v1 defending, during the course of a session, if I make a session all game realistic, some players might get a lot of repetitions of 1v1 defending, and some players might get 1, 2, maybe not even any repetitions. So I find that building through from very repetitive to game realistic during the session, sort of building the session as it goes, I think is my favourite way of coaching at the moment.
Yeah, and I must admit, I was doing a bit of a Bielsa. I was spying on you. I was looking on your Twitter, and I saw that realism and repetition, and I thought, wow, that that is so simple, those two words, but it's true. It is. It's getting the balance, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, definitely. Because, you know, if you have a session that is extremely repetitive, but the players don't get sort of to play, to use those skills in a game realistic sort of setting, then when you get to the match day, it's going to be really alien to them, because there'll be players going all over the place, the ball be flying about. And if they haven't got that, haven't had that in training, then they're going to really struggle. But, the other side of the spectrum, you know, as we said, if they've done an hour session and it's a finishing session and one player's had one shot on goal, you know, can you honestly say that they would have improved during that session if they haven't had the repetition?
Exactly. And it's, I love analogies. So an analogy for that is, say you're a plumber and you're fresh out of college, this plumbing college, and you know how to fix a tap because, you know, you've had an instructor there and you've been doing it all this time. But then actually, so that's the repetition. You've been repeating it. Then the realism is you go to this person's house. It's a different tap. It's a different setup, but it's still the same thing. But it's in like a real game environment, isn't it?
Yeah, most definitely. And I think obviously giving them those sort of game realistic experiences really helps them on a match day. And I think even sort of when you say repetitive practices, for me, that doesn't necessarily have to be one player kicking the ball to another. So for me, no. I like to get lots of chaos. I like to get players, you know, interference, even if it's an unopposed practice, players moving around, players having to check their shoulders because there's other players passing about. So, yeah, I think for me, a repetitive practice doesn't necessarily have to be two cones, two players passing the ball back and forth. So I think that's something that you see a lot of coaches like, and it doesn't look fun.
No, exactly. And a good repetition for me is sort of a goalie, two defenders, and then three attackers. And it's a wave practice. So the three attack the two, and then another three attack the two. So it's a continuous, but every outcome is different in every turn.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and even so, that's not necessarily a game realistic practice, but at points during the game, you will have two defenders against three attackers. So it does link really well into it.
Yeah. And I saw something else. I've written it down in my own words here, but you tweeted a great quote from Shane Warne, the cricketer. Do you know it off by heart? Do you want to say it?
Kind, yeah, maybe not enough. I think, but obviously to make sure you get it right, I think it'd be better if you said it.
Yeah, so I've got here, it says, Shane Warne said Panesar played the same test match 33 times instead of adapting, modifying and evolving himself and his surroundings. So basically, he played 33 games, but he effectively only played one because he did the same thing.
Yeah, and that links really well to a coach, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And I'm going down, I always have a list, I'm going down my list a bit too far here, I'm skipping some, but I want to bring up Jose Mourinho, because for me, he's a great manager, don't get me wrong, but I would argue that he's done the same thing for a very long time.
Yeah. You could quite easily argue that the game's maybe passed him by to a certain extent.
I feel it has, yeah. And I hate saying that, but I really feel it has. I mean, when he left Man United, he was saying, oh, yeah, you know, I've been doing a lot of thinking and all this. But, you know, he comes back and a month into Tottenham, he's exactly the same.
Yeah, obviously his style of football's not exactly the easiest to watch at points. And, you know, I think his man management skills compared with someone, you know, you see the Guardiola documentary and, you know, there was a great interview with Patrick Bamford talking about the way Bielsa, you know, and absolutely glowing words about Bielsa. And you think, you know, yes, there's got to be a balance. And at some point, especially at first team level, you know, you're going to have the harsh side of it because players are going to have to be dropped and all the rest of it. But when, you know, you want your players to be speaking about you, like the way Bamford spoke about Bielsa and the same way that Guardiola's players speak about him, with Mourinho, I'm not too sure if you get that too much, to be honest with you.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think it has passed him by. Back in 2003 up to probably 2010, yeah, I think he was really effective. But now, again, our topic is self-reflection as a coach. Does he really go home and reflect, or does he just blame everybody else?
Yeah, with interviews, there certainly seems to be a lot of that, doesn't there, in fairness?
Yeah, there does. So, say you put on a session and then you're driving home. Say you've got a half an hour drive home. What are you thinking in the car?
So I must admit, I'm extremely lucky where literally from the training ground to my house is about a 4 minute drive.
Oh, you're doing all right.
Which is absolutely fantastic. But with my day job being a postman, to be honest with you, I get like 4 or 5 hours a day sort of wandering around where I'm sort of, I can get lost in my own thoughts. I listen to a few podcasts, but that's a great reflection time. So to be honest with you, with my reflections, I like to leave it to the next day. I find that, you know, right afterwards, you might have a little bit of adrenaline, you know, and to be honest with you, when it's all fresh, I don't think I reflect as well. So I like to have that little bit of distance, sort of 24 hours later, come back to it, have a think about it, and then sit down and do my reflections then. And I think that sort of works the best.
I really like that. And I wish that's something I could take on board, but I'm very impulsive and sort of in, you know, just act in the moment. But that, yeah, if I could take that away, that would, it benefits, doesn't it? Because there are rare occasions where I have sort of, you know, I've had a parent saying what they think we should be doing to me, and I've just thought, do you know what? I will leave that till tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it does help. It does help.
Yeah, also there's emotions after a session where, you know, when you go home, think about it, relax, have a sleep, get up, and then think about it again. 9 out of 10 times you see it in a completely different light, to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because I was talking, I think on the first episode, I was talking to a guy called David, and he said that he made an initial reaction to his players about how they were playing and working out the game themselves. And he thinks they sort of played in the wrong way. But then once he'd had a day or two to think about it, he thought, do you know what? That was actually spot on. You found a way of getting past them and you did it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think in total, that's sort of part of the process, you know, because it's plan, do, review. And I think the review part of it is definitely the most underutilised by a lot of people. You know, going back to obviously what I said at the start, you know, doing 8, 9, even a couple of seasons ago, sort of 10, 11 sessions a week, you're not going to be able to review every session at the same level. And I think if you did, you'd end up, you know, you end up sort of spending sort of 10, 15 hours a week doing it. So for me, you know, I'll try to review 1 or 2 sessions in real detail. With my son's grassroots session, obviously we've only got a short drive home, and have a chat with him at dinner as well. Not in a pressure wise, but, you know, what did you think of this? What did you think of that? But then in the RTC sessions, literally I've got a proper criteria, and I've got my review linked to my session on my computer. So next season I can go back and look at topics and I can see what the review was, which I think is really beneficial.
Yeah, yeah. So I've got a question here. How, sort of linked in with all of that, how important is it having a philosophy or a game model or coach DNA, as some people call it, to stop you basically doing things that you didn't want to do and reflecting in a bad way? So how does that help? If you've got it all and you think, right, this is the way I'm doing it, how does that help?
Yeah, so I've set myself up a proper review criteria. So I'll with the RTC session, I'll sit down. I've got the points that I go through every time, which I think helps. You know how it links into my game model. You know, with the RTC, they've got their own, you know, game model and all the rest of it. So obviously, my sessions link into that. But yeah, I think, you know, having a set criteria really helps, because otherwise you can kind of just get a little bit lost into it, if you know what I mean. If you've got things like, you know, was the area the right size, how are your player interactions, stuff like that. I think that really, that's really beneficial, because you can actually sort of link it back to your game model. You know, if we're doing finishing from crosses, how does that link into how we're actually going to play on the match day? And I think that really helps.
Yeah. And we've all done it. You know, we play a game at the weekend and your team doesn't play as well and you lose, or the performance isn't the best, and you look across at the other team and you think, wow, yeah, I like what they're doing. They're playing two at the back, and then they've got this, and then they do this. So then you think, well, I tell you what, I might rip mine up and throw it away, and I might do what they're doing. And if you keep doing that, you're never ever going to find something that works for you, are you? Because you're always going to lose games. You're always going to have bad performances. So I think staying on that path and reflecting over your philosophy or your coach DNA is better than just trying to be whoever's hot at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. As I said, obviously, the RTC's got their own sort of a style of play and all the rest of it. And the good thing from my point of view is, although, you know, the aim is to win games, it is secondary to development. So if I, you know, if the team goes out and loses, there's no extra pressure on me. So we can look to play the style of football we want to play, you know, and there's no pressure on me to think, oh, you know, they lumped it long, it was really successful, so, you know, maybe we should look at doing that. I think that's quite liberating as a coach, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I've got something here, it's slightly off the topic, but if you're working, so say there's three coaches, for example, with me, there's two other guys, and I'd say in the last year, but before this, we weren't doing it, and we were all trying to focus on, you know, different the same bits in the session, and we'd both be looking at the same bit. So, but now we delegate a topic for each one, for example, like or let's say, okay, who are we as a coach? So I've got this young lad who still plays. He's really skillful. So I say to him, okay, every session you're going around with the boys while they're playing, because I play a lot of game based sessions. And you're just sort of looking at their technique and how they did this and, you know, giving them a little bit of advice with a drive-by every now and then. And then the other guy, he is quite upbeat and sort of praising and whatnot. And then myself, I like to sort of get in and do the psychological stuff with a player, like, you know, test them or talk to them in certain ways that will challenge them or give them confidence. So I think that, I don't know what you think, but I think that is vital, where to stop you going home thinking, oh my God, there's three coaches and we're all doing the same thing here. And then again, you're self-reflecting and you're thinking, what a rubbish session that was.
Yeah. So yeah, for me, we had last season, there was two of us coaching, and what we'd do is, you know, two sessions a week. One of us would lead the Monday session, so we'd plan the whole session and then lead it. We had quite a large group, so we had sort of 20, 21 players. So at times we'd break it down and do two of the same practices, or, you know, maybe two different practices and then swap them over. But yeah, so getting one coach to lead the session, and then the other coach, you can have a chat with them about how you want him to work in terms of, as you said, you know, if I'm doing the main sort of stop, looking at maybe a tactical point in the small-sided game, then he'll look at going in and doing the little drive-bys on little technical things he sees. And it's a really good way of covering all the bases.
Yeah, it's and again, it just takes the pressure off you, doesn't it? If you can delegate and you've got like-minded people. If you haven't, it's a bit difficult because you always feel like you've got to do their work for them.
Yeah, or even worse than that, if they've got sort of a slightly different philosophy, and I've kind of even had it before where we kind of end up sort of working against each other, which is obviously the worst thing, because it's not very productive for the players. So, you know, finding a good buddy coach who has the same, they'd have to have completely the same philosophy, but who's on the same lines as you really helps, creates a really sort of good sort of working relationship.
And you say about you and the guy that worked with you, the buddy coach, did you have a relationship where you could both sort of criticize each other and sort of say your views and no one would get offended?
To be honest, I'd sort of I'd known him for a good sort of 2 or 3 years before we started coaching together with the RTC last season, where we coached another team in a development centre. So we got on, we get on well outside of a football, environment, which is good. But yeah, it's yeah, what you want is a situation where you've got that open and honestness enough to where he can come to me and say, look, I don't think that's working. How about trying this or this? And I won't get offended. And on the same token, if I see something that's really not working, he's quite happy for me to come over and say, well, how about we do this? So at the end of the day, it's all about the players at the end of the day. There's no point in having this ego and thinking, well, I'm not going to listen to him because I'm right. And just that, having that openness and that understanding, I think, because in the day, the main thing there is for the players,
Yeah,
so your coach's ego should definitely take a back seat.
definitely. And I've been an assistant coach before, and not having a voice is not a very nice feeling, is it? It's, you sort of think, well, what am I doing here? I'm just taking orders. Whereas if you're involved in the process and you can, like, say, plan, do, review as coaches to each other, it's a win-win. I think your players will benefit, won't they?
Yeah, so after sessions, we'd probably be 15, 20 minutes stood in the car park, reviewing it between us. This went well, that went well. And then maybe the odd text message after that, evening or following morning. Certainly helps. Having a good, I've been, we're really lucky we've got a good technical director as well. And he'll sit in with sessions and, he'll talk to us about a few things afterwards. And that's really helpful as well, to be honest with you. And that's why, in a way, it's quite gutting to see that FA coach mentor program going. That's something that I've really benefited from a few years ago. It was really good.
I know. And yeah, I mean, that is the epitome of self-reflection, isn't it? You go to a mentor, they help you. If you've got any problems, they give you some ideas. I mean, when back 3 years ago or whatever, when I was doing my level two, it was brilliant having someone just there saying a different side, different opinion, or offering you help.
I've my UEFA B tutor, he's on the other side of the world in New Zealand, and every now and again he'll still drop me a message and I saw this tweet or something and how about this and how about that. So that's that, that for me is really going above and beyond the call of duty, which is absolutely fantastic.
No, it is. It is good. Another thing I've got written down: self-doubt as a coach. How can we overcome that?
Yeah, it's difficult. This is something where I've had, I'm honest enough to admit it. Something guys a lot of self-doubt, and I've had that sort of quite a few points when I first started with the RTC, because it's a big jump up, and there was a while where I was really doubting myself and I was going away and beating myself up after sessions and didn't do this, didn't do that, that could have been better, I missed this coaching point. Could have done that, and yeah, and it's really self-destructive, to be honest with you, and it's a really sort of difficult spiral to get yourself out of.
It is, yeah. And I really struggle with I will research something or plan something quite well, and I think, yeah, that is really good. I'm gonna do that, and then I'll change my mind.
Yeah.
And it's like the devil on the shoulder all the time. Oh yeah, but if you do that, what about this? What about that? Oh, this might happen. And it's sometimes you just gotta leave it behind, haven't you?
Yeah, it also goes, I think, as we said sort of earlier, it goes back to just the years experience coaching, and you know, the more years you put in, the more confidence you start building up in yourself. And I think that was part of it. The technical director was really good, sat down with me, and you know, and being a lot more balanced with my reflections as well is another thing where, you know, that's another thing where going back to just leaving that little bit of extra time between the session and your reflections really helps. Where, you know, if you've had a bad session and you reflect on it straight away, it's obviously going to be negative, you know.
Yeah, that's it. And you'll make heat of the moment decisions and whatnot. It's and also for anybody listening, I think if you are struggling with a bit of self-doubt, maybe look at your sessions. Are you trying to put too much in them and make it, you know, take a step back, think about the player like you said, and make them as simple as you can. It just simple doesn't mean it's rubbish.
No,
does it?
Definitely not. No, you know, it goes back to sort of just, you know, game realistic sessions with my under 14s. You know, you can work with just literally one single player if you want to. If I'm working in a 4-3-3 and I want to work my number four, you know, you can, especially it's good things also having another coach who can maybe work with other things. But I can work with literally that one player the whole session, which is beneficial for him, and it's also beneficial for the team, because if we can help that player, then it also helps the team performances at the weekend as well.
Yeah, definitely. Another one I've got. Do you reckon that your players can sense your self-doubt? And I'll expand on that. So if you're quite inconsistent as a coach, so I was talking about I'll decide on a pathway and then I'll jump off it because it hasn't quite been what I thought it would be. And do your players sense that? Do you think they sense that, and do they react to that?
That's an interesting question. I think I'm quite good at sort of hiding my emotions. I'm quite a bubbly, quite an outgoing person, and I think maybe that hides those times where things aren't going very well, to be honest with you. But at the same time, and you can see it with other coaches. You can see, you know, and I've not going to name any names with any coaches, but I've seen coaches who are really negative, and you can just see how much impact that has on the players. So having that positive demeanor, having a positive attitude, I think, you know, it rubs off on the players the same way. So even if deep down I'm struggling, on the surface, I try to keep that positive demeanor, and I think that sort of rubs off on the players big time.
Yeah, I think you're right, because an example for that, it's not my team, but I was watching this team and I knew the girl who was playing, and their team lost the game. The coach was clearing up all the balls, equipment and whatnot. And they do man of the match after every game, which a lot of grassroots do. And this girl, I can't remember how old she was. I would say 11. And she came running up. I'm not going to say his name. Who's got man of the match today, or player of the match, you know, girls. And his response was, "Well, do you think anyone deserves it after that?" and that stuck with her. That stuck with her for the next 5 years.
Yeah. And it's amazing. Little things like that can have such a massive impact. Going back, and this is one thing that I reflect on, and I'm really sort of still even to this day, sort of, it makes me cringe, is when I first started the first season, we had a lad who scored an own goal. And I was the assistant. The manager had said, right, you know, next time the ball goes out, take this player off. And he scored an own goal, and I took him off straight away, because obviously I was only just starting as a coach, and the manager, who was this big, loud person, right, get him off as soon as the ball goes out. He scores an own goal, and I take him off.
Yeah.
And you could just see, and it was as soon as I did it, I kind of realised, wow, you could just see, you know, it just absolutely, well, scoring the own goal would sort of drain the life out of him, and it just absolutely killed him. And you're thinking, wow, just something like that just can have such a massive impact on a young player's, you know, on their confidence. And so that's something that I even look back at now and think, oh, that was a horrible thing to do.
Yeah, but also it has an effect on the player. But I think that has probably shaped you and your coaching as well, even though you don't know it.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, there's little things like that. There was another game with my son's team where, you know, literally we were struggling. He was playing a certain position and sort of left it, and, you know, really he didn't get much game time. And he sort of looked at it and thinking, yes, it was my son, so I suppose you're not going to have another parent have a go at you about it. And I'm thinking, well, I look back at that and thinking, no, at the end of the day, you know, especially now, my philosophy is try to give players as near to equal game time as I possibly can. And that's something that's really shaped me. That thought of him going home, and I had a chat with him in the car, but him going home having barely touched the ball, you know, and how much impact that had on him at the time, you know, it's sort of shaped me as well, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and we've all been there. I mean, with my son, I'll have a sub on the side because we do quite a lot of rotation, and you'll have a sub and you think, right, Jack needs another 5 minutes. Oh my God, everybody's been off, haven't they? And then, of course, who'd you pick? Your own son.
Yeah.
You know, just because you don't want to upset any parents. So, sorry, Alfie, off you come, mate. You know.
Yeah, it's something that shaped me as well, where both my kids, sort of when they were really young, played for the different teams. My eldest especially, he was in that situation where, because it's, you know, non-competitive games, they play a first game and a second game, and he would literally have 5-10 minutes max in the second game, you know, and take him from there into a situation where he was getting equal game time to all the other kids, you just see his development skyrocket, to be honest with you. And part of that obviously is the extra game time, but part of it is confidence as well.
Yeah, it is. It's going back to the topic, self-reflection. It is so important, really. Do you have, like, so say you were a grassroots coach or whatever, do you have a pre-season meeting with you and your coaches and a post-season meeting just to reflect on things?
Yeah, with the grassroots, you know, this year's a little bit more interesting with everything going on. You know, we've literally come back to training. I think we've had about 4 sessions, and this week was the first, you know, contact session. Next Tuesday after training, we're going to do the trophy presentation, because I didn't get an end-of-season trophy presentation. So, yeah, I think we're going to sit down from there and have a chat. You know, it's quite good because we've got, you know, the bloke is the manager. I help out with the coaching. And then we've got a young lad who was actually part of my oldest son's team. And they got to sort of under 17s. And, you know, it was looking like, you know, when it gets to that age, you've got girls and alcohol and all the other distractions, and football becomes kind of a secondary thing, which you can't really blame them. But I said to the group, I said, you know, does anybody want to come along and help out coaching? And he has. He's done his level 1 now, and he helps out with the training session. So yeah, between the 3 of us, you know, we had to sit down, had a chat about how things went, how we want to progress. But you know, with everything with grassroots, it's that turnover of players and trying to make sure you get enough players, which is obviously the older they get, the more difficult it becomes.
Yeah, it does. And so say, I mean, and at grassroots, it's difficult because you will have people with different views. Like, you know, it's not like an academy where, okay, say you, Rob, you're looking at this academy and you think, yeah, I'd like to go in there. I like the way they do this. This is their philosophy, et cetera, et cetera. Where grassroots, you get who you're given, don't you?
Yeah. The next 2 weeks we're going to have a couple of open sessions and, you know, get a couple of players, see if we can get a couple of extra players along. But yeah, it's a difficult one with grassroots because in Oxford it's quite a saturated area. There's a lot of teams and, yeah, we're hopeful about getting sort of a couple and getting up to sort of 15, 16 for the start of the season, which we're 11 aside. You kind of need, to be honest with you, because especially with grassroots, you get every now and again, you'll get a player who's ill or can't make it for some other reason. So yeah, you know, but I think we've been pretty lucky because the last few years we put up one flyer, and every other year we've got players bringing their mates along. So, hopefully it means that we're, as a team, are doing something right, that players are willing to bring their mates on.
No, it's good. And with your meetings that you have as volunteers and coaches, how do you, it's a big word, amalgamate. Oh, I said it. I thought I was going to muck that up. How do you put together, that's a better way, how do you put together all your different ideas to create one philosophy or path you're going to go down?
Yeah, so with the grassroots team, the manager, really good old boy. He's not, in fairness to him, he's not a big football fan, to be honest with you. And he even admits that. I'm in a situation where I do the training, but unfortunately, I can't be there on the match days because I've got other commitments with the RTC. So, he's fair play to him. He's kind of left that with me, where I kind of come up with the ideas of how we're going to look to play. As I relayed them through him, and then we sort of do them through practices, and then take it out into the match days. It's not not the most ideal situation, because obviously I don't see many of the matches. So I kind of get a lot of secondhand information about how things are working, what's not working. But at the end of the day, it's all about giving players that opportunity to play. So I think it's not the most ideal situation, but I think we're making the best of it.
I've known in the past of that being the case. Someone does training and someone does matches, and I think it can actually be quite good because you've just said that that guy isn't really a football person. So then, does he ease off and let the players sort of, oh well, Rob said this. Rob said we want to do this, so we're going to try it. Does he let that happen?
And that's something with me. We'll have a good chat with the players. If we've got a we've had the game on the Sunday, and we've got the training on Tuesday, have a chat about what went well, what could we improve, what worked, what didn't work. And so yeah, it's quite player led, to be honest with you, which gives the players a lot of ownership, and they really enjoy that, to be honest with you.
I've got on my list here video and audio recording is a great way for self-reflection, because it picks up things that you say. You might have tics and you constantly say the same thing, or you constantly act the same way. So have you ever recorded yourself?
I do have a microphone. I do record myself every game. In terms of video recording, I've done it once or twice. It's not the easiest. I've sort of had it once where I've put the camera up on a tripod, and you'll see some of the practice and you won't see others. And I've kind of had it with someone wandering around with the camera filming it, and that doesn't really work either. So, but in terms of audio recording, it's something I could try to do at least once a month. Which is one of the best things you can do, and it's also one of the worst, because obviously everybody hates the sound of their own voice, so it's really cringy listening back to an hour and a half of me recording, speaking to about myself, me speaking. So that's always a bit strange. But yeah, I found it massively beneficial, and yeah, as you said, there's sort of certain words that you say a lot, and there's sort of things you think, right, I could have done that differently. I think one of the main things for me, and it goes back, there was a webinar last night about sort of session tempo, and just really that economy of words is absolutely massive. Can I say in 10 words what I've said in 30?
Oh, exactly. No, I totally agree. And I watched a Liverpool documentary, or I watched something. It might be Inside Liverpool, something like that. I think it might have been on YouTube, and Klopp was there, and Pepe, I can't say his second name, Pepe Linders or whatever his name is. They were talking about how they get all this masses of information of how we want to play, what we want to do. And he says, we just simplify it and we give every player, when we have meetings with them, 3 points. And it's just, you know, for me, that's just, it's brilliant because 3 points, I mean, everybody is human and we're going to forget, you know, if I'm waffling, people are going to forget what I've said at the start.
Yeah, definitely. Especially, you know, with the foundation phase as well, you're talking about kids who might be 6, 7 years old and they've got the attention, they haven't got a 5 minute attention span, so you could have the most amazing coaching points, but in fairness, most of it's not going to be taken in and sort of going to be acted upon because they just don't have that attention span to take it all in. And you know, going back to the fact that, and I've sort of through the recording, it's like, so from the end of that session through me debriefing that bit, me explaining the next one, you know, if that takes you 5 minutes, that massively impacts your ball rolling time. And obviously, especially when it's cold weather, it doesn't help the players from that side of thing. But yeah, I want my sessions to be tempo, ball rolling, players enjoying themselves. And although we're there to coach, players don't really enjoy listening to the coach that much. A bit helps, but too much is just bores them.
Yeah, I think you've got to limit yourself to 10, 20 seconds max. And you've got to pick and choose when you do it, haven't you?
Yeah. Just going in the right time with the right coaching intervention is, one of the main skills of coaching. Obviously, every now and again, if you're, for example, trying to link your back four to your midfield two, and you're stopping a small-sided game to look at it, that might take you a little bit longer. But individual coaching points, yeah, just trying to be snappy, trying to be in and out and using that economy of words is beneficial for everyone.
Well, and also, you're quite like me with your game-based sessions and whatnot. And I've got a lovely parent who I get on with, and he's so open and he says what he thinks and whatnot. And when I first took over the team, I'm blowing my own trumpet here. I don't want to sound like that. But what happened was he'd come over after, you know, a fair few sessions, and he'd go, "Adam, I've got to hand it to you. Every time you set up something that you're going to do," he stands there and he says to himself, "They're not going to get this. I don't know how they're going to get this." And he says, you don't even like talk to him. You just send them into it, let them experience it. It looks really ugly, but then they come out of that and they've got it. Yeah. He said, and he openly said, "I would have stood there at the start for 2 minutes explaining what we were going to do." And I said, "Well, that's just, I've been there. That was years. That's just years. You know, at the start, yeah, I was putting on sessions just to look good and, you know, and waffling at the start and whatnot. Whereas now it's about the player, get them in there and get them playing."
Yeah, I think the best sessions as well don't look good. You know, one thing which we kind of focused on a lot last season was just trying to get that element of chaos into sessions. Mm. If you can give players loads of decisions to make in the sessions, even more than they would on a match day, actually when they get to the match day, it becomes a lot easier. You know, things like just adding extra balls into a game. If you start with one ball, put a second ball in, put a third ball in. Players are getting a lot more touches with three footballs than they would do with one. But in terms of communication, in terms of scanning, in terms of teamwork, you know, things like that are massive. And in a game situation on Sunday, they're not going to face three balls. So then when you go back down to one, look at that and think, well, actually, that's not as hard as training was.
Absolutely. But again, it's a coaching culture, which is what I call it. And some people have got it, like you've got it, and, you know, you don't mind it looking ugly. Some like it like an army drill sergeant, you know, it's everyone in lines and whatnot. And also some, again, self-reflection or self-doubt, some worry what the parents think. And they think, well, this session has to look good for the parents to justify me being the coach.
Yeah, that's a very good point, in fairness. I kind of, I get so focused, I kind of zone out and I don't even sort of see parents when I'm coaching, to be honest with you. So I'm quite lucky in that point of view. But yeah, you know, I've been extremely lucky with parents. I've heard some stories about very overbearing parents. I've had parents who, you know, are very supportive. Obviously, through the RTC, they've very much kept in the loop by the program, and you know, at the start of the season, it's all set out. But with grassroots as well, you know, trying to keep the parents in the loop, I think, is very helpful, because in the day, all a parent wants is what's best for their kid. So if they know that you've got their best interests at heart, as well as them, then I think it certainly helps. You know, you don't want to be fighting against parents, but
no.
You know, getting them on side and explaining what you're doing is certainly very helpful.
I agree with you to a certain extent on that. Yeah, they do want the best for their child and whatnot, but also sometimes they do get blinded a little bit by the overall team result and the performance, don't they? In some certain circumstances.
Yeah, it can happen. As I said, with the RTC, it's all about player development. So if we, God forbid, we went and lost every single game next season, you know, we want to win games, and you know, you want to. There's been a sort of a certain amount of a culture of winning doesn't matter. Where, in fairness, if you're developing people when they go into an adult situation, whether it's football or a lot of things, where actually winning is important. So if you go through from 6 to 16 saying winning's not important, then suddenly go into an adult setting where the objective is to win the game, then they're going to struggle. So, you know, as I said, development's the key. Development's what we want. But, you know, winning's a good byproduct.
It's a very fine line, isn't it? Because, again, using an analogy, if you give everything to them easy and, you know, don't worry about that. Don't worry about competing with that boy, that team. Yeah, then when we transfer that into jobs, they'll just think, well, why am I having an interview? They should just give me this job because I want it. You know?
Yeah.
So they have to learn to compete, but yeah, it's gotta be development. 80%, 90% development, 10%, you know, whatever, 20% winning, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, you see a lot of grassroots where it's pretty much the opposite. And that goes back to those situations where, so with my eldest, where he was getting, even in a sort of friendly situation, he was getting 10 minutes in the second game because they wanted to win the games.
Yeah.
And so his development was less important than the result, even though those results were friendlies. You know?
I know.
Yeah, I've seen a situation where, obviously naming no names again, where I went to watch I think it was like an under-8s cup final, and four or five players sat on the bench, and then it went to extra time, still sat on the bench. So they went to penalties, still sat on the bench. And because it was obviously whatever the end of season cup finals they do, there was no second game. And those players went home having not kicked a football.
Crikey, yeah.
Yeah.
I know, and it does happen. We play teams, and their strongest player plays the whole game, you know, and just to get the goals, or just to stop the goals going in, or whatever. And it's not doing them any good in the long run, isn't it?
It's all about, you know, and that's how it goes back to the parents. Is you explain to them, look, you know, this is what we want is to develop players, and in the long run, that'll help develop a team.
Going back to coach reflection, would you advise coaches sort of writing up a little reflection sheet, and you know, it can have like headings and or boxes they can tick about how they feel they did, or do you think that's causing a problem?
No, well, yeah, obviously, said. The more sessions you do, the harder it becomes to you know, reflect properly on everything, because as I said, you end up driving yourself mad and you end up with not enough hours in the day for everything else. But I think it's beneficial to do a reflection sheet. If you do one session a week with a reflection sheet, I said it also helps if you're writing up your sessions and you reflect on them, and then next season you do the same topic. It's really helpful from that side of it, because I can see, right, this worked, this didn't work, I should have done this differently from when I did it originally. And that sort of, that gives you a bit of a leg up on the next season. You know, as long as you're balanced with it and you're not too negative, I think, you know, I can't see any problem with it, to be honest with you, as long as you've got the hours to do it and you don't then neglect your family.
Yeah, that, and that's it. Yeah, and you've got to sort of leave the result or leave the frustration at the door when you get back, don't you?
Yeah, I must admit, when I first started, I wasn't very good at that, to be honest with you. And I'd kind of be brooding for the rest of the Sunday, where now, you know, yes, I'm a bit gutted, but I'm more gutted for the players than I am for myself, to be honest with you. You know, but as long as I feel that I've put them in the best situation I can, and, you know, then there's only a certain amount you can do as a coach, and you can't kick the ball for them.
No, that's right. And earlier I said about, you know, I said about that drill. I don't often do stuff like this, but you know that, just for example, for the podcast, that three attackers against two with a goalie.
Yeah.
Like a wave practice. Now, say a coach was doing that session. Now, in the past, probably 5-8 years ago, I'd be doing that session and I would have labelled it an attacking session, let's say. But then I'd find myself telling the defenders about their body position, or, you know, their recovery run, or the goalkeeper about his positioning. And so it then doesn't become an attacking session. It becomes everything, doesn't it? And I think that is where some coaches go wrong, and they end up stressing because they're trying to hold too many strings.
Yeah. And this goes back to the buddy coaching, where if it's a, you know, attacking overload session, you can maybe have your buddy coach do a little bit of work on defending if you want to, and then you just focus on the attack and stuff. But yeah, I think it's just narrowing your focus and having that laser focus on what you want to achieve in that session is really helpful, because, yeah, you can see a million things. A player who's not controlled the ball properly, a player who's, you know, done this, done that, not got the head over the ball when they're shooting, it's gone really high. And you could end up coaching pretty much every second of every session. But it's picking your moments and knowing what you're coaching and just sticking to that, which is difficult. You know, you'll see something in and out again, you think, oh, we want to step into that. But, you know, if you've got a syllabus, or you've got yourself set up during the season, you're going to work on all those things anyway.
Eventually. Exactly. Yeah, you will. And what we've found, my group, as you know, when we're coaching, while the players, they're having a kick about before, you know, while we're waiting for everyone to turn up, we'll be standing there, us three coaches, and I will say, right, today, guys, we are just looking for this. So, I don't know, head up, looking forward for the through ball. You know, we're going to praise that. We're going to try and help them discover that. And that's all we're looking at. Don't, you know, if there's a great tackle, don't praise it too much. We really try and squeeze out what we're trying to work on.
Yeah. Well, I would say so we'll have the sessions in the week, and then I'll set the objectives up so the players will know what they've worked on. And yeah, going into the match day, that will be the main objective, will be linking back into the topic for the week. But it's also because we're in the foundation phase, we get half an hour a week to work on tactical. So it's very much a technical syllabus, because we want to create good technical players then to go on to the youth development phase. But a match day is a good time to work on those tactical things as well. You know, it's something that maybe gets neglected at some points, where, you know, especially in up to under 12s, where it's under 11s, where it's all, you know, friendly football. Why not work on those tactical things on a match day? If the result's truly not important, you know, why not work on sort of how we switch play, or, you know, how we defend as a back three?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, definitely. No, it is very important, self-reflection, and because I think if you don't, I mean, you've got the right balance. I mean, you're doing a lot more sessions a week than me. I mean, so you have to just say, do you know what? That's not important. But I think self-reflection does have its place, as long as you don't go stir crazy with it and end up, you know, really paranoid. I think it does have a place.
Yeah. I think, you know, as I say, it's plan, do, review. You know, I think if you do no review, you're not going to end up growing as a coach. But at the same time, if you do far too much review, you end up, you could drive yourself crazy. You know, if you hyperanalyze everything and really break everything down to the minutest detail, you could really go crazy.
No, it could. Well, I think it's been a good topic, to be honest, because I think a lot of people do neglect it. I saw you write about it on Twitter, and it's true. It's one of you say that it's one of your biggest traits, and I think it's something that others should do a lot more of. I mean, down my area, there's a lot that really need to do it, because, or maybe they're not able to do it, so they need videoing or recording, so they actually realise what they are doing. And I'm talking about the ones who are, like we said, all about the winning. Yeah, they've left little Johnny sitting in the cold. He hasn't played, and I think self-reflection for them, or again, this is where the mentor scheme was quite good, because there's still some out there that could really do with the help, to be honest.
Obviously you do get the odd one where they know better and they just continue doing it anyway, but at the same time there's also coaches who, you know, it's just they could do with a bit more education, to be honest with you.
Yes.
And, you know, them reflecting themselves, things like the coach mentor system is really beneficial for that.
It is. Well, we're at the end, and at the end I always get I do a little bit of something fun, so I get you to come up with a five-a-side team, because you're football, we've gone with five-a-side team. So a five-a-side team which is reflective of your beliefs, players you like, and all that sort of jazz.
Right, so I've gone for players I've seen live. So I thought, well, that, you know,
ooh, okay.
Yeah, players I've actually seen play in the flesh. And I've kind of, you'll see sort of from the players I've picked kind of what kind of football I really like. So first of all, we're not going to do much defending with this team either. So I've got I've got Ederson in goal, you know, as a goalkeeper, really good technical ability. Really good with his feet, brilliant distribution. I've gone with, we're not really playing any defenders, so I've got Xavi and Iniesta as my kind of defender / midfielders. The same again, just superb technical ability, seem to have so much time on the ball, really good awareness, also got some 1v1 ability. So yeah, two, let's say, defensive midfielders, and then two up front with Messi and Zola. Messi, obviously, just the best player of all time. You know, having watched him live, you just those little things about just the way he slows down just at the right time to find himself in the middle of four players where he can receive, the 1v1 ability. Oh, it's just unbelievable. And yeah, Gianfranco Zola has always been one of my favourite players. And it's, I do love a really technically gifted player, to be honest with you. High stature doesn't really matter if you can do it with the football, for me.
I was going to say, they're not knocking their head on the door when they walk through, are they? They're not.
but you get them on the ball and they're not going to lose it very often.
No, that's it. And I'm glad you've picked Zola, being a Chelsea fan. He, wow, what can I say about him? Just unbelievable.
Magnificent player.
I'm glad to have grown up as a boy when he was playing for Chelsea.
I was lucky enough to see him in a cup game. And a sensational player, to be honest with you. Really, really good.
But he was so nice as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, really. I mean, it's a shame it hasn't quite worked out for him as a manager. But yeah, really, really good player. You know,
and also I'm a bit upset that Chelsea didn't keep him on, to be honest. With all the ex-players that they're now getting in at the club, I think he deserved better, to be honest.
Yeah, you'd think there must be a place for him somewhere, you know. But it's the way it goes sometimes, unfortunately.
Well, and we've seen it. Just because you're a good player doesn't mean you're a good, you know, technical director or assistant coach or manager, does it?
No, that could be a whole other podcast topic, to be honest with you. It's one of those things where, you know, me, myself, I played a bit when I was younger. played a bit of adult football, dog and duck, you know. I feel I could see it, but I couldn't play it. But, you know, I've got sort of other qualities in terms of my communication skills, the way I can connect with people, where, you know, and I coach alongside, and I have coached alongside some really good level players, especially in the women's game, some really good players who are also really good coaches. And there is a massive benefit from going through loads and loads of training sessions and also working under good coaches. So, you know, ex-players do have some really big advantages over non-playing coaches. But if you haven't got that other side in terms of the psychological, the social, you know, so, yeah, it's an interesting one. I can see, because I've seen a few ex-players kind of bashing non-playing coaches, but I don't think they're necessarily right, to be honest with you.
Yeah. No, I'm quite on the fence with it, because like we said about Mourinho, there was a time where he was absolutely brilliant, and he never played. I mean, he played pub football. He didn't play to any standard, really. And, you know, he's done, well, look what he's done in the game.
Yeah. And I think, in fairness, you know, a lot of clubs want a name. And if they weren't maybe as interested in the name and the manager, then maybe there would be more coaches coming through who were non-players.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Just quickly before you go, this is something I can't decide on. Do you think girls, maybe this is another podcast again, you'll have to come back on. Do you think girls learn quicker than boys?
I would say yes, personally. I coach both girls and boys, and I haven't really got a preference. I enjoy coaching both. You know, and there's some areas of the game that girls have benefits over boys, and there's parts of it where boys have an advantage over girls, in fairness. I think, in, you know, girls, they're better listeners. I think, you know, there's players last season where you're explaining the session, you look up and they're laser focused, and they're really, you know, really in. And you get boys where some of them a bit more, have a little look around, want to have a little chat with their mates. But at the same time, you know, girls at points sort of doubt their ability a lot more than boys, where yes. Boys have got that maybe confidence, and a lot of times maybe overconfidence as well. So girls need maybe a bit more building up, where boys maybe need a little bit more knocking down.
Yeah, I think you've said that quite well. I think girls, they are, again, topic is self-reflective, they are very self-reflective and self-critical, aren't they?
Yeah. I think they're, at times they can be more afraid to fail as well. So I think part of my job, and an important part of my job is as a coach, is putting, you know, making them confident enough where they feel comfortable, not if they do fail, that I'm not going to be shouting at them, you know, they're not going to get subbed off because they have failed. Where, you know, they know their coach is confident in their ability, and they know their coach has got their back.
Yeah, it is. And that is all you can do. But the trouble is, again, with girls, they care what the other girls think a bit too much, don't they?
Yeah, potentially at times. I think the sort of that connection with girls is a lot more beneficial as a coach, you know, where boys, you know, they turn up, they have a kick about. With girls, you know, it's something that getting to know them, and, for example, there was a player last season who, during the half term, went skiing. So, you know, putting that in the bank, and then next week after half term, how was your skiing trip? You know, things like that, you know, my coach, you know, he's actually listened to me, he's taken on board, and he actually wants to know what I'm doing.
Exactly. You know? And that, yeah, and that is boys and girls, isn't it? If you can connect with them, you are, that is 70% of it.
It helps, and you know, me personally, I genuinely care about my players. You know, I want the best for them. But yeah, and this is it. You know, and I think that maybe goes back to why I was sort of so hard on myself at points, because I want the best for them. And if I feel that maybe I'm not giving them as much as I could have done, that's maybe part of where I sort of, I was doubting myself to a certain extent, because I just want the best for my players.
No, that's right. That's right. And just quickly before you go, God, we could talk forever. What one little thing that I'm now doing in my sessions at the end. Again, I'm trialing it. Don't know if it's going to work. Don't know if it's going to be beneficial or it's going to cause problems. But after every session, we get in again 10 seconds, and I just ask the question. Out of three, how good was that session today? And you know, they just put three fingers up, 2, 1, 0. No other words are said. We just put our fingers up, and then I say, right, I'll see you on Saturday. And it just gives me time to look at who enjoyed it this week, who didn't, and then maybe I reflect and I think about why.
Yeah, that's quite interesting, because to the end of the sessions, we do have a little bit of a debrief, A, to see, you know, if they've taken on board the coaching points, you know, what have we done here, you know, but also I do like to ask as much as possible about the session. But you know, you normally get one or two, oh, that was good, this was good. And what I quite like about what you just said was actually you get to see what everybody thinks rather than just those one or two more vocal players. So that's actually quite an interesting idea, to be honest with you.
Because what I do, actually, I've said that wrong. What it is basically it's a point system. Zero for losing, one for a draw, and three for a win. So zero is it wasn't very good. One is it was all right, and three is brilliant.
I think that's a really good idea, because you said you get to see the whole group's perspective then on the session rather than just asking one or two questions. Yeah, I think that's a really good idea.
And then if I want to, I can log that. And on Saturday, I can maybe say, or maybe the next week, you know, not on a game day, on next Monday, I can say, you know, Jacob, you gave the session a one. How could it have been better? You know, what can we do today to make that better then? Make it a three. And that sort of thing.
And planning interactions with players like that is beneficial as well, definitely.
Well, it's that's 68 minutes. Oh dear. So
Bye.
no interruptions or nothing.
No, I've done all right, to be honest with you. I was expecting either a child or a cat or someone to interrupt me, but
Well, no, thanks Rob for coming on. That's been really good. You've got some good ideas and good sort of experience, really.
yeah, it's been really enjoyable chatting.
Thank you. If you'd like to, I'd like to do another one about repetition and realism, because that I just saw that today and I nearly fell over in excitement. And I think that'd be a really good chat for another one at some point.
Yeah, definitely. More than happy to come back on.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll do that. All right.
Brilliant. Right, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. We are on Twitter, so please give us a share, give us a like, give us a follow at _coachlife. And me, your host, I am on Twitter at the Fat Perlo.